The latest nursing news and information brought to you by the Johnson & Johnson Campaign for Nursing's Future. This is Nursing Notes Live. Nursing Notes Live is an audio extension of the national award-winning monthly e-digest Nursing Notes, which highlights examples of nurses creating improved patient outcomes and transforming the new standard of care. You can subscribe to receive Nursing Notes updates at www.discovernursing.com. Each month's Nursing Notes content is accompanied by two episodes of Nursing Notes Live, which expands on the content and provides you greater insights into the topics presented in the written format. You can listen to previous episodes of Nursing Notes Live on our podcast player at discovernursing.com and subscribe to the podcast series on iTunes. I'm your host, Jamie Davis. In this episode of the Nursing Notes Live podcast, I bring you Nurse Hilde Shell Chapel, a clinical nurse specialist in patient safety and regulatory affairs at the University of California, San Francisco Medical Center. She is also an associate clinical professor at the UCSF School of Nursing. Hilde works in a smart ICU, and we're going to ask her what that's like in this episode. Check out her interview. Hi, Hilde. I want to welcome you to Nursing Notes Live. It's great to have you on the show. And I will start off and ask you to tell us a little bit about yourself and why you wanted to become a nurse.
Well, thanks, Jamie. I am a clinical nurse specialist at UCSF Medical Center. I have worked in adult critical care as a CNS for the past 25 years and recently transitioned over to our patient safety team and am able to use my clinical nurse specialist systems, clinical leadership skills in that department and affect safety across the organization, but have cherished and loved my work in the adult critical care division at UCSF for years. So why did I become a nurse? I know it sounds corny, but I really do feel like it was a calling. I wasn't around nurses growing up. I loved the science and things like that. And I'm a people person, but and just actually, frankly, knew I thought, well, gosh, I could have a flexible career, could have a family. So I think since eighth grade, I kind of thought that's what I wanted to do. And I am the biggest advocate for nurses. Anyone I know that wants to go into nursing, I think it's an amazing career. It's not for everybody, but the rewards are unbelievable, and to do be able to serve patients and families and do this meaningful work and is, you know, I think I don't take for granted because I know not everyone has that in their work.
Yeah, it's amazing how many things that nursing opens up for you in the way of different doors and opportunities. I know when I went through nursing school, I had no idea the different things that would be open for me as I went through my career past school, and never thought that I'd find myself in a journalistic avenue of nursing. But, you know, there are so many different ways and different directions you can go with nursing that really it opens many opportunities for different people.
Exactly. So my niece is looking into nursing, and I'm like, you know, if hospital nursing isn't the only thing, some people like to work in operating rooms. Some people, you can do public health. You can go to DC and do policy work. There's administration. We have nurses that are playing vital roles in industry of all sorts in healthcare industry. So there's research, there's academia, so you can be an educator if you love that aspect of it. But there's meaningful work in all those areas.
So I noticed when I was looking over some of your background that you're really involved in quite an interesting project at UCSF Medical Center, where you're involved with a Project Emerge, a smart ICU program. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I think the media coined it smart ICU. That was a really hard term. But yes, UCSF has been in an amazing collaboration with Johns Hopkins University for the last 5 years. And we were lucky to be grant funded by the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation here in the Bay Area to do this work, to innovate, to create innovations that One of our specific aims were to eliminate preventable harms in the ICU, to engage patients and families in their care, and then to engage the staff and optimize the experience for everyone. So that project, we were able to meet those aims. It was kind of three-prong. One was we were going to engage the staff and create our culture of safety and in teamwork and continuous learning. So we implemented a comprehensive unit safety program. Two, we needed to engage patients and families. So we created the first inpatient patient and family advisory council at UCSF. Other places do have them, but this was specific to critical care. How do we know how to improve the experience for patients and families if we don't talk to them and get people that have actually experienced it? And I think that that has, for our team, in particular my physician colleagues, really opened our eyes to we don't know best, and you know, and to how they see our work. And what's really important to them isn't always aligned with what we think is important to them. So that's been amazing. And it was led by one of our clinical nurses, Jane McCullough, who has done amazing work there. So we have that component. So there was the culture of safety led by another clinical nurse in the unit, Denise Barkas, and then the Patient Family Advisory Council. And all these are interprofessional. So we've got physicians, pharmacists, respiratory therapists, you know, rehab specialists. So then the technology, which was where the SMART came from, the SMART ICU came from, the technology innovation was designed initially at Hopkins, and then we wanted to make sure this was transportable because the aim of our work wasn't just to have, you know, to meet these aims at UCSF and Hopkins. It was the foundation that sponsored us really said, how do we spread this to other places, because this should be the same care, and those aims should be the same in every ICU across the country. So an app was created and an interface to translate data in our systems, in particular the electronic health record, to go to this app to visualize the data about risk for harms, about the prevention bundles, if you will, all those interventions to prevent the specific harms we tackled. And then were we adhering to those? Because right now, so the harms that we aim to prevent, because we know that patients aren't just at risk for one harm, they're at risk for many, but we couldn't address all of them. But we had seven, and they are prevention. They are the harms that we identified are ICU-acquired weakness, pain and delirium, ventilator-associated events, or pneumonia in particular, VTE or DVT and PE, and CLABSI, or central line-related infections. And the other two non-traditional, or what we call non-clinical harms, are we providing care that's aligned with the patient's goals of care? So if we are incongruently doing that, we consider that a harm. If you're getting care that you did not, that was not your goal, that we consider that a harm. And then the other one is, did we provide care that was that was with respect and maintained their dignity? There's a lot. So this is new, and it really has changed the culture in our unit to say, you know, gosh, did I, you know my patient's name? Do I know anything about them as an individual? I mean, they're not just the liver transplant, 58-year-old liver transplant patient. It's, gosh, you know, a school teacher, has three children, their favorite music is, you know, Keith Urban, you know, things like that, because that's, you know, we did some work with Hopkins and their Bioethics Institute there on defining, like, what is respectful care in an ICU? And they've also created a tool to survey and measure that. So this is new. Beyond the clinical physical harms, we're now looking at what we consider, you know, psycho-emotional harms to patients, and have changed that environment. So we have this app that visualizes red, green, and yellow, and, you know, are we, it's to provide situational awareness, because otherwise we're doing everything by memory. Did I do the oral care? Is the head of bed up? These are all interventions to prevent ventilator-associated pneumonia. You know, did they get their spontaneous breathing trial? And it's, so it's situational awareness for the providers, the nurse, the physician, the respiratory therapist. They don't have to go digging through pages and pages in their electronic health record to see in all these different places in the record, did they get these things or not? You're just assuming that they were given or provided. But it also flattens the information hierarchy, we call that, where the physicians see the same thing that the nurse, that the physical therapist, or the respiratory therapist sees. The pharmacist, we're all seeing that same information, because believe it or not, in EHRs, the views are different of whether you're a nurse or a physician or a therapist. Intentional or not, that's just how it is, and people don't know where to find that data. So it's been very exciting. It's used regularly on rounds. So the teams now talk about things that that they used to not. I mean, it just didn't come up before, and we've done some measurement on, were these things addressed on rounds or not? And so it's sort of kind of as a checklist, if you will, but it's not, we're trying to avoid the memory-based work for everybody. And so it's been a really great experience. It was not easy, and it's in its early kind of pilot phase still. But I think clinicians.
It sounds exciting because I hear you saying that there's nurses involved in some of the leadership roles in getting this moved forward, as well as the rest of the interdisciplinary team, and they're really giving us an opportunity to get back to that kind of bedside care where we're learning more about the patient, where we're asking the questions that about their who they are as a person, not just as their illness.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's. The whole team, this one of the, most rewarding thing. I feel like I have a really strong interdisciplinary team in critical care here at UCSF, but we were able, we had everyone at the table for this, including the patients and families. I mean, the generosity and the insight that patient family advisors bring and the time, that they take to, because they want this to be, coming into an ICU is traumatic for many people. It's very unfamiliar. It's not like what they see on TV. And, if you don't know what to expect, you go into this environment where there are hundreds of people. Some are wearing funny gear and masks and gowns, and there's devices. And it's like, we don't want to lose that person. And we want the families to be there with their loved ones. So it's humanizing the ICU environment as well, doing more of that. And again, engaging the patients and families. Their families know their loved ones better than any of us do, even if they've been with us for a while. And how do we kind of, again, put them on the same level of providing information? And, it's like, well, the family said this, and that should be on the same level as a vital sign monitor, that's valid, reliable data that we should include in our assessments and identification of the plan of care.
Yeah, I've long said, and I do a lot of educating of nursing students and even paramedic students, and I've always said, mm-hmm. Listen to the families, not just mm-hmm. for children, but for people of all ages, because you can learn a lot about what's really going on behind the scenes by just opening your ears up a little bit.
Yeah, and it's a mindset, paradigm shift, if you will. And I think the stories, the examples help drill it and help people value it if they don't have that firsthand experience to, the safety benefits from it. It's like, well, that dad gives his disabled daughter those anti-seizure meds every single day of her life. And when he says, gosh, that seems like a lot watching the nurse do it, that you need to pause and not just like, oh, he's making a comment. But yeah, I know I barcoded, checked this, because he's picking up that's really odd. And by the way, if you take it seriously and then go the next step to look at the dose and run it by him and say, well, this is the dose, you might find out that it's been ordered incorrectly, or dispensed incorrectly or something. There's a safety component. A personal example I had, it was rounding, and a family member came out of the room of one of the ICUs, and she was in there. She was like, I was holding my, sister's hand, and I just noticed it was really, really warm. And I'm like, okay. And the bedside nurse was either with their other patient or on break. And I said, well, let's go and take a look. And you know, sure enough, that hand was warmer than the other side. And I start looking up, and I'm like, oh, there's a PICC line. It's a little more swollen. Thank you for letting me know that. And I'm, you know, she had a venothrombus, you know, related to her PICC. And here's a family member, just nothing about this, but the nurse had done their assessment in the morning. Things change between 8 a.m. and now 4 p.m. And we have them as additional, you know, it's not their job to do that, but if someone's like, oh, well, thanks for letting me know and carrying on, you know, you miss early detection and intervention. So that's super important when they're present that you want to be open and say, anything you notice different, let me know. And, you know, we're on a team. They're on the team with us taking care of this patient.
That's really awesome.
It's a paradigm shift. Yeah.
So, you know, you mentioned that you want to, you know, one of the goals of this project, obviously, is not just to have this at UCSF or at Johns Hopkins, but also to have this at all the ICUs around the country. When you look out there, you know, where do you find these new innovations coming along? Is there any particular news source or organization that you consider vital to your practice?
Well, I think that question has two parts. Well, one is about, you know, the spread of it. And, you know, we are now putting out, again, this is like beta testing. And an analogy that we use, innovating technology in healthcare is not the same as developing an app that helps you at home with something. We all expect rapid, you know, I can press it with one button, that everything be intuitive, because that's what we have access to for the rest of our lives. The complexity of healthcare, the dynamic, the nature of patients changing, you know, minute to minute, hour to hour, the security issues around health information. Can't just have things, you know, where's that data going? And so there are some challenges. So the analogy we use is that this Emerge app is kind of the Atari version of a video game, and it is nothing like today's Xbox version, where those basketball players on, you know, look like they're real when my sons are playing. So and they're very interactive in a different way than 20, 30 years ago. I think it's the beginning for these tech innovations, but I think every clinician that you go to say they need something, because the EHRs are so complex, there's so much data, and people don't know where to find things. This is a common theme. So anything that will help them know the things they need to know about their patient to take care of them, rather than spending 20 minutes looking, that 20 minutes could be spent face-to-face with their patients, getting to know them, and, you know, providing nursing care in terms of nurses, and then other being more efficient with our time and our complex system. So your second part of the question was about news sources. Well, you know, my area is critical care, but, you know, so the news sources there, you know, the lead is, you know, American Association of Critical Care Nurses, amazing high-level professional organization, the Society of Critical Care Medicine. Their news sources are very important. That's an interprofessional organization, strong nursing section, pharmacy, they even have veterinarians, but that's a great source for those two for critical care. I think, you know, who's really great at, like, hey, this is the latest, whether it's about a new drug or something that's been pulled off the market, is the American Journal of Nursing. Considering the breadth of nursing issues, does a really good job in their monthly journal. There are these pages that have little kind of snapshots of these things. I gather so much information from that, and it's across the spectrum of nursing that we talked about earlier. In terms of informatics related, because I think this is an area in nursing that we need more advanced education training and nurse leaders in nurse informatics, as nurse informaticists, as a part of these informatics teams in organizations across the country, because of the complexity and because the workflow of nursing practice, and it's in our interface with electronic health records, is essential in terms of maintaining standards of care. And that may need some explanation, but it's a really complex area. But JAMIA, the Journal of the American Medical Informatics Association, is out there for that type of news. It's an excellent kind of journal, and you can get some breadth on those more tech informatics type of news.
So we're kind of wrapping up here, so I'll just ask you my traditional last question, and that is to just kind of share with our nurses out there and maybe some of our student nurses that are listening to the show as well. Is there a piece of advice or something that a mentor once said to you, maybe back in nursing school or when you first started nursing, that you've carried with you throughout your career?
Oh, that's a great question. I think there's not one saying. I do remember a nurse, clinical nurse specialist, when I was at my first year of nursing, saying to me, "We need people like you in nursing," when I was thinking, oh, I could go in other directions. And I've stayed in nursing. And because the ability to impact and the reward is and doing meaningful work is going to be there. But in terms of advice, if it sounds really simple, but that term patient-centered care, that's what we're here for. And if you can remember that in everything you do, that's why we're here, then everything else falls into place. And to stay engaged with your patients and families is the only way to have the work be meaningful. It's not about tasks, nursing care. It's about that relationship and engaging. That's the only way we can actually be effective and help our patients in their healthcare journey. So I would say that. And then in my particular specialty area, in training many, many nurses over the years into critical care nursing, is that do not lose your clinical assessment skills. The technology is additive. You get extra information, but it's touching your patient, listening to your patient, their family, and making sure that that is the, you know, that you don't lose those skills. Because when you just look at data numbers and they're all downloaded into a computer and check, it's that physical and being present with them that is really how you can make the biggest difference for your patients, whether it's early detection of something, whether it is that therapeutic communication. That's where you make the difference, and then that's where you get the reward from as well, to keep doing this and having joy in your work.
Stay tuned for our next Nursing Notes Live episode, where I talk with Nurse Nicole McCormick, a nurse practitioner with the University of Colorado Hospital in Aurora, Colorado. We talk about trends in nephrology and transplant nursing, as well as discussing the future of nursing care in this exciting field. You'll find this and other episodes of Nursing Notes Live in the podcast area on iTunes, as well as our podcast player on discovernursing.com. Nursing Notes Live is produced for the Johnson & Johnson Campaign for Nursing's Future by Medicast Productions. All rights reserved.